Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. This is your show host, Randy Fine. So, you know, in this day of texts, emails, and instant messages, we have forgotten about the handwritten letter. What place does it have? According to today's special guest, author, teacher, speaker, rabbi, and chaplain, Ilana Zaman, they're as special as ever because of their uniqueness in today's immediate gratification electronic world. Forever letters are the perfect containers for our most precious non-material possessions, our beliefs, wisdom, love, gratitude, forgiveness, and more. She has written the book, a very engaging book, called The Forever Letter, and Writing What We Believe for Those We Love. And today she's going to tell us what the forever letter is, why it's so important, and how to do it. So let's get started. Let me introduce you to my guest. Good morning, Ilana.
Good morning, Randy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for being my guest. It's wonderful. So this is a great topic, not one that I've covered, and it's different. So what is the forever letter? Let's start with that.
Okay. The forever letter is a letter we write to deepen, heal, and uplift our relationships. That's essentially what the process of writing a forever letter is about. It's really a process of self-reflection that's at the core of it. We're honestly assessing our own values and strengths and weaknesses and fears and actions. And from this authentic self, we identify the people who are most important to us, and we write. We share our wisdom and stories, and we accept responsibility for misunderstandings and hurts, and we ask for forgiveness, and we forgive, and we share our love and our gratitude.
Now, years ago, or back in long, long, long time ago, this was called ethical wills. So why did they call it that?
So this, the forever letter is not quite an ethical will. An ethical will was a document that was written in the medieval times in the Jewish community, and it was a letter that parents, for the most part, wrote to children to pass on their values. And oftentimes these letters had a sense of commandedness to them. Even some were more loving, some were more of a commanded tone. But in any case, the idea was really the hope was that you follow the traditions and the precepts that that we have given to you. But the point of many of these letters was they were very deep and they were very real and to the point. And it was through my study of those letters and actually really through my experience with receiving an ethical will from my father that got me into this whole letter writing thing. The idea of vulnerability, the idea of putting yourself on the page, that was what really connected me in a deep way to this process. So ethical wills were part of this ancient tradition and part of the ethical literature of the time that was developing. And it was mostly a letter parents would write to children. The forever letter is really a letter that everyone writes to everyone, children up to parents, parents to children, grandparents, spouses, I mean anyone to anyone, to really deepen, heal, and uplift relationships. And it seems like into this day and age when we're living in these sort of disconnected times, you know, and as you introduced, you know, the age of texts and Twitters, to really be able to sit down and focus and think about a relationship and the importance of it and what's in it and what's missing from it and what is so special about it is something we don't even let ourselves do because we're racing so often from place to place. So this time of reflection is so important to deepening what the connections we have.
You're absolutely right. And this generation, the generation that's grown up knowing nothing but texting, they don't even know how to have a telephone conversation. I know, you know, if I call my kids, you know, they're 26 and 32, they don't want to talk on the phone. They just want to text quick things. So this is could potentially become a lost art, and it's wonderful that you're actually reviving this whole idea. But I know that when my children write cards to me, they write long messages, and I cherish that mm-hmm. because they express mm-hmm. themselves so well.
Do you remember the last letter you got from them, from one of them?
It would have been on my birthday. And my son writes more than my daughter does, but in every single letter, he thanks me for all I do for him, how grateful mm-hmm. he is for having me, how much he's learned mm-hmm. from me. I mean, he just really lays it out there, and it's unusual. But he's not the kind of person that would say that in person, but he writes very well, very beautifully.
So you bring up something really interesting, which is something about, you said he wouldn't say it in person, and so there's something
yes.
about putting something on the page that that enables us to maybe say things we might not otherwise say or come to realizations we might not otherwise come to. There's a safety. There's connection and distance. And the beauty of it is you get it in the mail, and then you can reread it however many times you want, and his presence is there for you right at that moment each time you read it. He keeps come back. But it is true. It is true about not being able to sometimes you know, not to say in person what we might say. I had a friend who was, when she was divorced and dating different people and stuff, and she found that when she was meeting people online, she was able to open herself up more to those people than she would have, you know, had she met them in person first. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, it is. It is easier sometimes to, there are some of us who can express ourselves well face-to-face, but I think a lot of people have that problem. So, you know, people often say to me, because I'm a writer, and people often say to me, oh, you know, I have a story to tell, but I'm not a writer. Well, I didn't used to be a writer either. As a matter of fact, I hated English. I hated literary classes in school and in college. I just despised grammar. I hated all that. But I was compelled to write my memoir back in 2009 and found I had great writing skills. So from that point on, I fell in love with it. I find it's a great way to express what I want to say to people. So I completely agree with you as far as how important these things are. But people often say to me, you know, well, I have something to say, but I'm not a writer. What do you say to people like that?
Oh, I say you don't have to be. the person that you're writing to, you know, you don't have to be Shakespeare or, you know, or Anthony Doerr. You can be yourself, and that's what the people that you're writing to want to hear. They want to hear you. They want to hear your inflections, your tone. They want to hear what it is that connects the two of you and what you feel about them. You know, they're not interested in highfalutin language, or they just want you. And it doesn't matter about your being a writer or not. The fact that there is a letter from you, a person they care about and love, means the world to them. And even if you can't write very well, and even if you don't spell very well, and, you know, I even say some people who are immigrants who are writing, you know, sometimes they might want to have someone write down whatever words they have. But even if it's, you know, sometimes people pronounce things a little differently, like I love you instead of I love you, right? And I would suggest even like if someone were taking down someone's words, that they take that down, I love you, because that's exactly what it is. That's how they say it. That's what they are. And that's the meaningful moment for the person reading the letter. I mean, that's yeah. So, no, you don't have to be anybody but yourself. You just are yourself, and that's great. We all can put ourselves down. The important thing is just to be as honest and as you as you possibly can, because they're not looking for a major writer. They're looking for the person they love.
Absolutely. I agree with you. So there's times where well, first of all, let me just say this. We want our letters to have a positive feeling to them. We don't want to write hate letters, right? We don't
Absolutely.
Want that out there, right?
No. Definitely okay. not.
Yeah. You know, I know in certain situations where the people that I've written to have been difficult people in my life, I know that no matter what I write, they read something different. What do you say about that?
So I think that, you know, we can never know how we will be heard exactly when we write. But part of what I do in the book, and part of the questions, the prompts I give, and then the questions for reflection after we've written, is to think about the way in which the person who is receiving our letter could possibly be reading it. So, you know, we have to be careful. There are people out there that will that are more vulnerable. There are people out there that are more, you know, quick to judge or, you know, have a button pushed. And how we phrase things for different people and the relationships we have with them might be very different. So it's just something we need to keep in mind. And what I recommend when writing a letter that, and this is not a letter of like a forever letter, is the idea is you really want to write something meaningful, that your intention in writing is that the person is going to want to hold on to it forever because it's so meaningful to them. Now, whether they do or not, we don't know, but that's the intention in writing. And so the hope is that when we send it to them, that that's how they'll feel. And so what I recommend often is that people, you know, write down, get down all they want to say, and then, you know, put it in a file, let it sit for a while after doing, you know, responding to different prompts and things like that. And then, you know, over the next sort of month or so, different ideas come up because you've started really thinking deeply about that relationship. So then you put in a little couple notes into that file, and then eventually you pull it out and you begin to sort of craft a letter. And then you also don't send that letter out as soon as you're done with it. You let it sit and you take it out another week or two or three later, and you say, okay, so if I were reading this letter from, you know, this person's point of view, how could I understand it? How could I understand it? And then, you know, you might just say, oh, okay, maybe that person would read in this or that. And you try to change tone a little or shift it a little when we know the people we're writing to. And we never know how it's going to be perceived, and we just do the best we possibly can. And part of that is being, I believe, vulnerable ourselves and honest ourselves. It's not about blaming. It's not about you did this. It's really about opening a door and sharing. That's what it's about.
Okay. It's wonderful. It really is. You know, it brings me back to all the letter writing that I did years ago, because that was our way of communicating. And we wrote in
yeah.
script. Nobody writes in
yep.
script anymore, except us old people. I think it's a lost
yeah.
art.
It is.
So in chapter
and when
six,
we got
talk
those
about,
envelopes. Go on.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, when we get those, you know, I remember getting envelopes, you know, and from letters, and you just knew by sometimes the color of the stationery or also by the script who was writing
yes.
to you. You just knew before you even opened it up, and you would be kind of like, oh, wow, this is from Grandma, or this is from Dad, or this is from my best friend. You know, you just, it's like, wow, cool. It you know, deepens the excitement, enthusiasm, you know.
Right, and we used to have pen pals and things like that to write to. And, you
yeah.
know, and I started many years back, I got an interest in antique postcards, and I started
mm.
collecting them and reading them, and it's fascinating what they write
mm.
to each other. And in many cases, there wasn't really mail. And they had to be, you know, I don't know how they delivered them, how they got across the country, but it's really interesting. So in chapter six, you talk about what to avoid in writing. What you suggest five things. What are those five things?
You know, I wish I could remember them all at this very moment, but I'll try to speak to.
Well, I got the book,
to...
so let's see.
Good. Okay.
Favoritism. Okay. Let's see. You talk about favoritism.
I would
one?
Avoid. Yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about. So favoritism is something to definitely avoid if you're writing a letter to. Sometimes, if you're writing a letter to a group of people. At the same time, if you're a grandparent and you're saying you're writing a letter to all my grandchildren or something, sometimes parents, grandparents, parents will do that, or aunts and uncles, or even children writing up to parents, right? You want to be able to, if you're going to write a letter to everyone, then the letters to everyone, sometimes people put, you know, a different paragraph to highlight, you know, well, Mom, I want to tell you this about you, or Dad, I want to tell you this about you. And the thing is, we have to be very careful how we do that if everyone's reading the letter, because there really has to be the exact same space devoted to each person, and the same number of sort of positive accolades should be present. It really is. People, you know, because everyone's reading it and you get a different feeling. Can you imagine reading one paragraph where, you know, someone's writing about how disappointed they are in someone, and then the next paragraph they're writing about someone else who they think the world of? That's just, that is not only bad for the relationship of the writer and the receiver, but it's really not good for the relationship between, let's say, the siblings or whoever else is on the letter, right? We want to make sure we're not hurting relationships by saying different things. So sometimes if you really have something that you want to say that's deeply personal for one person, it's better to sort of just write a letter to that person. But we do have to be careful how we weigh things. Because
yeah, I think
look,
that's very good advice. And something that that many of us might make a mistake doing, yeah. Yeah. Whenever I write anything, whether I'm writing for a book or I'm writing an article or whatever, I always write it and then put it away till the next day.
Mm-hmm.
When I reread it,
yeah.
I read it totally differently, totally different.
Totally.
So, uh-huh.
Totally.
So,
and what you think is brilliant the night before is like
yes.
you wake up and you're like, oh, I have to write it again. It really isn't so good.
Right. It's like, oh, this isn't so good, right?
Yeah.
Okay, the second one is commanding with the pen. What is that?
Right. So commanding with the pen is sort of like what authors, what lawyers talk about in terms of commanding from the grave, right? But the idea is this sense of, you know, people will live their own lives. They will. And so if our goal in writing letters is to try to dictate how someone should live or be, or give them something that this is the way they have to do it, our words might not be heard. And this, all of these suggestions are in the context of being heard, right? How do we write best to be heard? And so being attuned to the person that we're writing to and understanding that that person will live his or her own life. And how do we make, if we have wisdom we want to offer, experiences we want to share, or what is most important to us, right? How can we do that in a way that does not infringe on that own person's sense of being in the world and how they will choose to live their life? Can we offer guidance or love or wisdom and accept that that person might not live the exact life we want them to live? And that's quite all right. They're living their own life, right? But how do we approach with that in mind?
Right. And we don't want to lay guilt on people in these letters. We don't want them, you know, we don't want to pass on and have them stuck with these commands that, you know, that they said, oh, God, now it's written, and I've got to do this, and I've got to, set my, you know, live my life according to these rules. So that's a really, really good one. I like that. Okay, the other one is, third one is telling family secrets. Oh, boy, I could get that. So what is that about?
So, again, we want to be careful with sensitive pieces of our family history. And, you know, I do talk more about this in my book, so I'll let listeners listen, listeners read. But essentially the point is, when there's something really deep and that it's important to have those conversations in person and not to drop in the letter, oh, by the way, did you know such and such and such and such, for many, many reasons. But the point is that people need to, you know, have these personal conversations about deep issues and not leave it to be found in a letter.
Okay. So if we need to drop the bomb on somebody, we don't want to write it. We should say it, right?
Yeah, and it's not the bomb. I mean, it's just if there are family secrets, if there are family issues that we know about, or that someone, you know, that one person might know about, right?
To
put it in a letter form, I know that this and this happened, and here you go, and you're left with it.
Exactly.
Right? You don't want to just to have it like that. You want to have a conversation about it. You want to be honest, here's what I know, and what's the purpose for telling? Do you tell? Do you not tell? I mean, sometimes I recommend that people talk with their therapists about what to share and what not to share, and what is the purpose for sharing. And it's not, and again, the issue is also not just the relationship itself of the person you're writing to, but it's also other people might be involved. And how does that, you know, talking about that in a letter context change your relationship with other people in your life? So these are conversations that are huge conversations that are best to have in person.
Okay. Okay, so the next one, encouraging others to live the values we never lived.
Right. So that is about, it's, I give some examples again in the book itself, but the idea is that, you know, we, sometimes we are disappointed that we are not living the lives that we had wanted to live. And so what we think we can do sometimes is get someone else to live them for us. Maybe it's our children, our nieces, our nephews, or maybe it's we're teachers or professors and there's a student, and we want that student to go on and do this particular thing. What was it? Was it Good Will Hunting, that movie where there was this brilliant guy, you know, and he was the janitor? I think that was it.
Yeah, that was it.
And he, you know, no one could solve these great, you know, these huge mathematical problems. And there he was, you know, the next day everybody would come in and like, oh, my God, who solved the problem? And they discovered it was this, you know, janitor who was doing it. It was a beautiful movie. And then there was this push to get this kid to become, you know, a mathematician or physicist, whatever it was. And he wanted nothing to do with it, right? And so it was everyone pushing him. And we, you know, someone might have a brilliance in something, or someone might be terrific at something, but that might not be where their heart is taking them. It might be where our heart wanted to go for us, right? But it might not be where they themselves are.
Sorry about that. Okay. Sorry about that. I didn't mean for that to interrupt us. Okay. Okay, and the last one, lying to others, lying to ourselves.
Right. It's pretty straightforward. Lying to others, we have to be careful about lying to others and also lying to ourselves. Sometimes I think we live in a bubble where we're not quite always telling ourselves the truth. We give ourselves different, you know, oh well, this and this and this. We give ourselves different reasons for why we're doing something or not doing something, when in fact we're not really being completely honest with ourselves. And so the idea is to really look at ourselves and then move forward. And I remember one of the examples was had to do with, you know, if it's an issue of alcoholism, or, you know, there's the sense of, you know, before an alcoholic realizes they might be an alcoholic, there's a lot of, I'm not an alcoholic. And so,
denial, right? Right.
There's a lot of denial. And that's not just, I mean, I use that example. It's not just alcoholics, but it's like someone who's a workaholic or someone who
right.
is, you know, thinks they have, thinks that they're so open to both of their nieces and nephews when in fact they've really favorited one over the other. But they're kind of lying to themselves about the relationship they believe that they have with them, not really acknowledging that, no, they really had pushed one of their, you know, their, one of their nephews aside. So it's really kind of suggesting to us that we take a good look at ourselves and that we really reflect on the depth of what is going on and if there is something to kind of take responsibility for it.
Okay. So so if someone is listening or they're reading, well, when they read the book, they're going to get all the answers to the questions I'm asking you in The Forever Letter is the book, and we're talking with Alana Zaman. That's Z-A-I-M-A-N, by the way.
Randy,
so what if somebody says, okay, I want to write, I said Zaman, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, I'm just double checking. What if somebody says, okay, so I want to write a letter, but I don't know what to say, and then they sit down and they try to write it and nothing comes to mind. How do they get started?
Well, so in my book, I have some prompts for people who might not be naturally drawn to writing, and their prompts are in different varieties. There are exercises in terms of things to think about and fun ways to approach it. There's sentence completions, which is starting the sentence off by saying, I love you because, or whatever, and you finish. And then there's questions to answer as well. But sometimes those prompts just get people going. People have a lot more to say than they think they do. And in any relationship that's meaningful to us, there's always something to be said. There's always a way to deepen. There's always a way to begin to heal different pieces in it. Even if it's not a major thing that happened, you know, there's always like a little healing that can happen and then uplifting. And that's something we can all do. And once we sit down at the page, it's really amazing what can start coming out. And so I try to do exercise. When I do workshops, I do exercises for a while with people so that they can kind of get the feelings going. And then they begin to just start to write dear and the name of the person they're writing to and begin. And usually at that point it begins to flow. And for people who might have trouble, I suggest that maybe they put a picture of the person they're writing to next to them as they begin to write, and maybe even a couple pictures of different points in the person's life if you're writing to someone who has lived a longer life, or maybe pictures of the two of you in places. So that then you feel as if the person is there with you. There was a study once about how when you actually look into someone's eyes, it kind of shifts and changes the feelings because someone is it shifts things in the body. Now, it doesn't probably happen as deeply when you're looking at a picture, but really, if you look into someone's eyes in a picture and you really get and you're looking at them and you're remembering the moment and the time together, that also can get people started. So I have a question for you. Have you ever received a letter from someone you love or someone you care about deeply where that you've held on to for all these years because it was so meaningful?
I hold on to all of them. But the problem is that years ago I had moved into a place and put everything in a box and there was a flood and it all got ruined. I lost a lot of my childhood and 20 somethings stuff. But yeah, I have letters, but you know, I also keep letters of that aren't so nice. And I don't know why, but sometimes I just need to remind myself of what I'm dealing with. So but obviously that's not the kind of letter that I want to sit and enjoy. So So I do keep letters. There's, you talk about techniques for stirring it up, and then you talk about a timeline. how to generate a timeline. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know it's in chapter, let me see. It's in chapter 7. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on the writing process.
So I think, I find it an interesting exercise to sit down and kind of just make a little line on a piece of paper. And, this exercise can take days or it can take, less time if you want. But just to kind of do a sense of where the day that when you were born, possibly the day or around near where, how long you think your life will be, a trajectory, and what happened during those different stages of life. And what are the meaningful moments that happen? So sometimes if this is done in a very extensive way, it can be like a life review process where you're really looking at different decades of your life and remembering people in them and things like that. For this purpose, one could go into that depth, but it really is a way of, births, jobs, friends, marriage, divorce, whatever's going on, death of significant people in your life and schooling or whatever, just to give you a sense of sort of the whole of your life at this point, and then that might spark different things that you might want to learn about yourself and also to write about in a letter.
Okay. You know, when I mentioned the letters that I keep that are not so nice, I have to qualify that by saying that as a narcissistic abuse expert and someone who has lived that life of someone that's been victimized this way, sometimes we we forget exactly what we're dealing with, and it's a very different kind of it's almost where we have to remind ourselves in order to avoid the people that hurt us the most in these situations. But that's very specific, and I guess that's really why I said that. But most people don't want to keep letters that are negative with people who they can mend relationships with. So I just wanted to say that. Okay, so when we send a letter, should we have expectations? Because I feel like we really shouldn't have expectations of others when we do things like this. Even when we do kind gestures, if we do them with expectations, we're going to be disappointed. How do you feel about that?
So I think that, I think that on a certain level when we spent so much time writing this, like, amazing letter, there is a sense of, like, expectation or hope, like, oh, please, I've just poured my whatever out, right back, and we wait, hoping that they will. And I think depending on what kind of forever letter we're writing it to whom we're writing, different expectations might be possible. But I think when we do it, we think of it as a gift, as something that we are sending on, and maybe there's a hope there that there will be a response, and maybe, there won't be, but to not be angry if there isn't. And if we feel we need some sort of response, to wait a month or two and just say at some point, by the way, I just want to make sure that I wrote you a letter a while ago, just to make sure it arrived. And because sometimes, mail might not arrive and you want to know. There is something to having a letter just be. And it might be that the letter was so meaningful, the person just has to take it in and doesn't quite know how to respond. Maybe the letter didn't resonate as deeply for them as you had hoped. But the idea is the writing of it and the receiving of it hopefully will shift things or will spark a conversation, or especially if it's an issue of forgiveness, may open a door that has been closed for many years. And so, I had someone just contacted me recently and said that, she had not been speaking with her brother for about 10 years, and there was stuff going on in the family after a parent had died. And she just didn't even quite know why they weren't speaking. They were never very close, but she wasn't sure why they weren't speaking. And so finally, after reading my book, she just decided, oh, I'm going to have courage and I'm going to reach out. And she reached out to him and, you know, not knowing what to expect. And she stated specifically, you know, what, I don't know really what happened, and this is silly that we're not talking, and it's been however 10 years. And the response she got was, you know, there was not a response specifically to the emotional not talking or hurt, but it was just a response saying, here's what's going on in our lives now. And it was a response. And so basically she said she felt connected or reunited in some level. And it would never be a close reuniting because they were never close to begin with. But at least now they were connected somehow. And that felt good. And, you know, he could easily not have responded, but he chose to. And so, but it wasn't a response specifically to what was said in the letter exactly, but it was a response saying, no, I'm here, you know, thanks for reaching out. So, I mean, there are so many different ways something like this can happen. I know when my father handed me this letter he wrote to me when I was 14, I don't think I said anything to him afterwards. I read it, I cried, I just took it all in, and I considered it was a gift to me. And I don't think I ever went back to him and said, Dad, oh my God, thanks for this. This blew me away. You know, this putting yourself on the page, being open and honest about yourself, this vulnerability, this humanness, you know. Like, I think I just was like, whoa. And I had to, you know, I had to sort of just, you know, take it in. So I think there are a lot of reasons for it. But I think if we don't have expectations and we send it off without expectation, we never know what will emerge. And again, it might not happen in letters. It might happen when we next see someone or something, and the person then will say, wow, thank you so much for writing. Or they'll change slightly in their attitudes toward us or something. So we never know how it will, whatever. But if we have a concern as to whether or not it actually was received, you know, we can always say a little ways down the line, just want to make sure, did you receive a letter that I wrote to you?
Okay.
And then it can just be like, okay, great, good, okay.
Right, got it, right, exactly. You also talk about writing your own eulogy in this book. Why would someone want to do that?
Well, I think in the process, if you're really, I mean, the forever letter idea is you're really deepening not only your relationship with others, but your relationship with yourself. And so if you are coming to know who you are and who you are not, because when we know who we are, we're also learning who we are not, you know, what would your eulogy be said? Or what would you want to be said in your eulogy? Or what would be a real truth about who you were in the world? And when you do that, then sometimes you come to a realization of how you're showing up and how you're not showing up. So that's the exercise on that level, yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's very interesting. We can learn a lot about ourselves by doing that. I would imagine. But
absolutely. It's very that's a good one.
Yes.
It really forces
it is.
Us
it's
to be honest.
It's a very good one. Right. introspective is what it is. Yeah. Okay, so some people that I talk to, they say, "Well, I had this ex and, you know, it ended badly, but I have some things to say, but they've asked me not to contact them and they don't want to be harassed. Is it okay to write a letter?" I just stumped you.
I'm not sure I can quite answer it in terms of, you know, if someone says don't contact me, then you're honoring, you might be honoring a request from them. So who am I to say, right?
Right.
Go ahead.
But if you have something that you want to say, like, for instance, someone said they heard that their ex is going through a major health concern and may not live very long. And this person wants to contact that person, but it was not a happy, you know, they didn't leave on good terms. And I guess it's really how we just choose to express ourselves. If we don't revisit old things and we just, you know, and then it's up to the receiver to decide whether or not they would like to read it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. And I think that, again, how you show up, if it's showing up to say, you know, I want to revisit past whatevers, or if it's just a note saying, you know, whatever happened between us, I'm not thinking about that. I heard you were ill, and I am so sorry to hear it, and I just want to send my, you know, my love and my and strength and healing or whatever, right?
Right.
Something like that. And what is, so I guess I would ask the question, what is the purpose for reaching out? Is it really to say something and to give a gift to the other, or is it really some sort of self issue that you're writing for? If it's only for the self, then I'd say then that's not worth, you know, it's not, it might not be right to write. But if it's for the other person, then maybe, yeah. And then I'd also encourage the person to just take a reflective moment and to say, you know, if they were put themselves in the other person's shoes and say, okay, if I were that person receiving a letter from me, how would it make me feel? Even if it were a nice letter. And if
right.
the letter
so
would
stir up. I think the bottom line is that the forever letter is a gift. It's a gift. And we want to be able to give something nice to another person, and that's our purpose. Okay, well, we're running out of time. The Forever Letter, Writing What We Believe for Those We Love by Alana Zaman. Alana, is this book available through Amazon, and where else can we get
it? Yeah, it's available through Amazon. It's available through Llewellyn Worldwide. It's available on Barnes & Noble. Most online sources carry it.
Okay, good. And if someone wants to contact you about the workshops, how do they do that?
They reach out to me at my website at www.ilanazaman.com.
Okay, and I actually have that up on the show page for those who are listening, and there's a link that goes directly to ilanazaman.com. So you can just go to the show page and click on that. Wow, this has been so enjoyable. Alana, what an
interesting
topic.
Thank you so much for your time.
Of course,
I really appreciate it.
And I wish you well with all that you do. And I hope that this is a successful book, because it is important that we remember these things. I know that, you know, this has been a huge reminder for me. So it must be a huge reminder for everyone listening. I think it's a very important topic. And thank you for writing this wonderful book.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's an invitation to all of us to reach out to the people we love and care about and to communicate with one another. And it's an invitation in letter format and some of the exercises and things in the book itself. It's also an invitation to how we show up when we interact with people face-to-face as well, in terms of how do we communicate to better connect.
Right. It's right. Great tools for interpersonal relationships. Well, thank you for being my guest today. I have to say goodbye.
And thank
you. It's been a really good time.
Thank you. Take good care. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
So we are out of time
for today.
We hope
you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.